Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
Welcome, podcast listeners, to episode 74 of the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm your host, Julian Klimochko.
And I'm Mike Kessler.
Today is Friday, June 26, 2020, a bit of a volatile week in the stock markets with COVID-19 cases picking up a bit in the U.S. Things are sadly reversing course a little bit, investors getting spooked. But some interesting activity still in the market. The IPO window is still open. We saw that Albertsons finally completed their going public transaction after seemingly how many years? Nearly a half dozen years of trying to go public. Kanye West, the popular rapper, celebrity, designer, did a big deal with The Gap, in which The Gap's market capitalization increased by about $1 billion. So I think Kanye West definitely undervalued here. And there was a SPAC deal this week, that's right, the special purpose acquisition company, Crescent Acquisition. They announced a deal with Mark Wahlberg-backed gym franchise, F45 Training, and it was well-received by the market. We're going to talk about some of the price action there and if investors should be buying. And lastly, we're going to talk about a blog post that I put out this week titled Heads I Win, Tails I Still Win, a discussion on low-risk investing with back arbitrage. And these days, with volatility picking up, stock market valuations near record highs, bond yields at all-time lows, I think low-risk investing is a good place to allocate some of investors' portfolios. But before we get into that, let's talk about this Yeezy deal, big deal, featuring rapper Kanye West and retailer The Gap. And The Gap has really been struggling over the past how many years? I mean, if you look at The Gap, they operate nearly 3,000 stores in North America, and going through COVID-19 with a ton of their stores closed, been super challenging. They recently withdrew their full year guidance. They suspended their dividend. They furloughed employees. Their stock has tanked 40%. So this Yeezy deal with Kanye West is really a new lease on life for the retailer. What it did, it signed a 10-year agreement with Kanye West for a proprietary line of Yeezy clothing. Now, Kanye will design affordable adult and kids clothing for The Gap. It will be exclusive to the retailer. And in exchange for that, Kanye will receive royalties in addition to potential equity based on sales targets. Now, if you remember, as Yeezy brand, very popular shoes with Adidas. And recently, it's apparently been valued at nearly $3 billion, Kanye's Yeezy brand. So certainly super popular and doing tremendously well on the shoe side. I mean, who knows? Do you think that he can replicate the success as he's had with sneakers with retail here at The Gap? I don't know. That seems like a bit of a stretch. What are your thoughts on this one?
Very interesting deal. And like you had mentioned with the big bump that you saw in The Gap share price, I just wanted to first quickly go back to the example we had spoken before about the Joe Rogan deal with Spotify. And then after that, Spotify did make an announcement with regards to a Kim Kardashian podcast. And Spotify has just been on a run since then. It's up over 50% since the Rogan announcement. And that has added almost $17 billion to their market cap. So you're seeing big numbers for these sort of celebrity licensing deals. And with the Kanye deal, just to get into the granular details on the equity issuance side, they haven't publicly disclosed what sort of royalty percentage Kanye will be getting. But on the equity side, they did issue warrants for up to 8.5 million shares that would vest if the line achieved $700 million in net sales during the fiscal year. And so that works out to about $100 million of equity value, or about 2%-ish of the company, of Gap. So, you know, a big payday for Kanye if he is able to bring in those types of numbers. Now, to put that $700 million target into context with the Gap, they had $16.4 billion of revenue last year, and that's across all of their lines. They also have Old Navy, Banana Republic, I believe, a few other brands under the Gap parent company. So that would work out to, you know, a 4.2% increase in revenue. And so, you know, like, these are quite lofty goals for him and the Gap, but it is something to try to rejuvenate the brand. And I guess, you know, for me, looking at this, what I'm interested to kind of take away and see how this will evolve is they have mentioned that they will allow Kanye to have input into the presentation in stores and on their website. So it'll be interesting to see if he'll make significant changes to their overall store aesthetic, as that is something that folks in the investor community have kind of been complaining about, is that they really haven't changed their aesthetic or their brand, and it has been struggling over the years. And as well for Kanye and for his Yeezy brand, which he is the sole owner of, is will this kind of be a little bit dilutive to his luxury shoe brand? Because they are, you know, they are a little bit more luxury brand as opposed to this, which is affordable. And I guess, you know, will this be a little bit dilutive? I really don't know. Other brands that have tried this out, you look at things like Hugo Boss, a brand like Hugo Boss, when they went to the little bit more affordable price point with an area of their brand, that really didn't work out very well. And now they're trying to, you know, recoup their brand placement. But for him, I mean, this could just be his way of kind of giving back to the community and giving them affordable options, affordable style and fashion options. And he's the sole owner of the Yeezy brand. There's no external shareholders, so that's his prerogative if he wants to do so.
Yeah, it's an interesting pivot for the Yeezy brand, obviously super successful in shoes. $500 shoes, mind you, so huge margins there. I wouldn't be surprised if that's worth close to $3 billion given the volumes that they're doing. But you make a good point. Can they transition to low-cost clothing for everyone? Because certainly not everyone can afford $500 pair of shoes. In addition, as you highlighted, that deal with Joe Rogan, Spotify, Kim Kardashian West, it just highlights the sort of state or perhaps declining brands, well, not Spotify, but something like The Gap, their use of celebrities to sort of boost their fortunes. We saw something similar a number of years ago with Weight Watchers and Oprah. They did a deal with Oprah, and I believe at the time the stock was sub $10. And since then, the stock's done extremely well. I believe it's around $25. So big gains off that Weight Watchers deal for shareholders. And that one, that's probably the closest analog to this Kanye Gap deal. As you indicated, Mike, positive share price performance. It was kind of on a downhill slope for a while, but stock up as much as 42% today on the news, did close up about 19%. Who knows how much of that is short covering, but nonetheless, at the peak, it increased in market capitalization for the Gap of north of $1 billion. So certainly Kanye West and other celebrities can boost stocks. And I would not be surprised to see more and more of these deals happening. I saw some news this week about LeBron James going big into media. And you see more and more celebrities trying to monetize their likeness, their image, which certainly makes sense. It definitely is an undervalued asset. And as we saw off the Joe Rogan deal, Spotify's market cap increased in the billions. The Gap deal with Kanye, their market cap went up over $1 billion. So true massive marketing power of celebrities. So we also had an interesting SPAC deal. What happened here was special purpose acquisition company Crescent Acquisition Corp. They announced an $845 million merger with a gym franchise, F 45 training, which is actually backed. One of their shareholders is Mark Wahlberg. This gym chain has nearly 2,000 franchises in 50 countries. So growing like a weed, super aggressive growth there. That's probably what shareholders like. It was founded in 2013. What F45 does, it's, you know, similar to many other gym concepts. They basically have merged high intensity interval training, circuit training, and functional training into one group workout. So it's really interesting that they chose F45 as their acquisition target, given, say, like the opposite of what happened in supermarkets, where supermarkets have seen this bump in business. Similar, you look at gyms, and gyms similar to, say, retailers like The Gap, they've just been punished because many of them have been closed and social distancing. In the age of that, it's kind of tough to run a gym successfully these days. So it was really surprising, the price action, that SPAC shareholders like this deal. It was up as much as 29% on the news, but settled the week up plus 6%. And I think that's more of a keenness of investors to get involved in SPAC deals, not necessarily bullishness on F45 training specifically, but super, super interesting dynamic there, and really lends credence to our bullishness on pre-deal SPACs and the tremendous upward price action that can occur when pretty much any deal is announced. We looked over the past month, any SPAC that has announced a deal, the market has been very, very receptive. Meanwhile, on Tortoise Acquisition, which we talked about on last week's podcast, what, that stock's up 65% or so? It's just madness.
Yeah, it sure is. And I mean, it not only does it lend credence to your view of really the market reacting favorably to any deal, but as well as anything that's being done that has any sort of celebrity backing. So the Mark Wahlberg connection, yeah, in this deal, I mean, that's just that. I think we were talking about this offline, where every single article you read about this, his name is brought up. And so that is, you know, it that sort of brand alignment does seem to be quite favorable, you know, outside of SPACs as well. A couple of interesting notes, and I'd actually spoken, I do have a friend, one of our listeners had reached out on this deal, as they are a F45 member. And, you know, with the actual, what is being offered, to me seems just very much like CrossFit.
Yeah.
Seems a little bit culty, very, very high user engagement though. But when I say it sounds a little culty, all that means is that they have a very engaged user base. So I won't take that away from them, but I really don't have much to comment on the actual valuation or anything, or their prospects moving forward, as any of the financial numbers that were quoted in the press release and the presentation were all pre-COVID. So I really have no insight into how this has done through COVID or how it will emerge on the other side. Would like to note that I believe about 20% of the deal, there is an exiting shareholder. Mm. So that's always interesting to follow in these deals, is that is somewhat unusual a little bit in these SPAC deals. Maybe on a typical IPO, that's a bit more the norm, but less the norm with the SPAC deal. I did also want to bring up, just in the area of SPAC, is a gentleman that we have spoken about many of times on the podcast, Bill Ackman. He got into the ring, and Julian, you had mentioned, I believe this was about a month, maybe a month and a half ago, that pretty much every hedge fund manager, VC, and private equity firm will be launching SPACs in the next year or so. That's somewhat coming to fruition here with Bill Ackman, one of the biggest names in the business, very polarizing, looking to raise. Now, they just filed their preliminary prospectus, but they're looking to raise a record $3 billion for their SPAC and go looking for a mature unicorn. And in addition, with that $3 billion, which you never know how much of that's going to be left after a deal for the company to have in their coffers. But Pershing Square, Bill Ackman, they are also have a forward agreement to invest another $1 billion. So the company will at least have $1 billion if no investors redeem, as well as an additional $2 billion that is not guaranteed, but still has the potential. And I guess they would look at based on the deal. But what I wanted to bring it up was, number one, the scale, but as well as the unique Tontine structure that they have structured for their warrants, where initially as an investor, you will be given 1/9 of a warrant. And just for context, typically in a SPAC, you are typically given between 1/4 of a warrant to a full warrant is kind of the range that you see per share. In this situation, you're giving 1/9. And then if you do not redeem, then you are given an additional 2/9. And that would bring you up to 1/3 of a warrant.
Yeah.
And so that's where it becomes very interesting. And a Tontine structure is something that has existed for over 100 years, where it's an insurance structure where people that pay into a pool as they die, that pool stays the same and accrues interest. But as you die, it's basically there's more left for the remaining survivors. And so that it's a unique structure that they're using for their warrants. And it's right in the name of the SPAC. I just thought that was an interesting thing to bring up, as there's plenty of new news in the SPAC markets these days.
Yeah, definitely interesting and creative Tontine structure in Bill Ackman's record-breaking blank check company. But to conclude on the Crescent acquisition F45 deal, executives at Crescent obviously bullish on it. Quote from them: they indicated their thesis behind the deal, F45's high profit margins, exceptional franchisee economics, and repeatable business model position it for continued rapid expansion. So it's really a retail expansion play. Surprising timing given what's going on with COVID, not to mention both 24-Hour Fitness and Gold's Gym recently filing for bankruptcy. We'll monitor this one, see how it does. But thus far, the market liking it. I'll tell you one stock that the market isn't liking, and that's Albertsons, who finally got their IPO done after two failed attempts. So Albertsons, they're a U.S. supermarket operator. They finally went public this week in a downsized deal for $800 million in an initial public offering, the first time coming to market for the grocery store operator. So the century-old grocer tried to go public and failed twice already. So this was their third time, which ended up being the charm because they're successful. So the first time they tried to IPO in 2015, that flopped. Then they tried to go public by merging with publicly traded Rite Aid a couple years ago. That also failed. And one of the things that we don't like to see is secondary offerings and private equity exits. You know, this one has all that and more, right? Like, because the reason it's going public is to provide private equity firm Cerberus the opportunity to exit their investing. So of the $800 million raise, Albertsons is actually getting none of that. That is all going into the genes of Cerberus as they partially exit this investment. It's been a long-term hold for them, much longer than your typical 7-year holding period for a private equity investment. I believe they had this, they bought it in 2006, so a super long hold, nearly 15 years. Following this IPO, they'll continue to own about 32% of Albertsons. And the way I view this deal is they really waited for the opportune time to take this thing public, right? As we've discussed over the past month or so, this IPO window is wide open. You've seen a lot of IPO pops that gets speculators interested in buying initial public offerings. So a wide open IPO window, in addition to pretty exceptional financial performance of grocery stores, because while everything's been closed, grocery stores have been open, not to mention you've had consumers stockpiling foods and other essential items, boosting temporarily the bottom line of grocery stores such as Albertsons. So they're being very opportunistic here. And I don't want to use the term lipstick on a pig, but it's somewhat similar to that. In terms of price action, they went out with an initial range on the share price of the IPO of $18 to $20 per share. They actually took that down to 16 on the IPO. Another thing you don't like to see. So what you don't like to see is temporarily good financial performance of the company. You don't like to see a downsized deal. This one was downsized, so they're raising less at the $800 million range. And then you don't like to see the price range to be reduced. It's kind of a triple whammy of bad news. Not surprising, the stock fell on its first week of trading, negative 3.4%. So certainly no IPO pop for Albertsons. And if we compare that to the average IPO since the start of April, it popped about 25% to the positive on the first day of trading. So it looks like that streak has broken. Who knows if it's just the uniqueness of that deal? That would be my best guess, is don't take that as all IPOs are going to start to do poor here. I don't think this has any sort of bearing on any future IPOs. I think we'll see, continue to see a lot. There's a lot of SPACs in the pipeline to go public over the next couple of weeks, and we've seen a ton of biotech IPOs. Those will certainly continue. What are your thoughts on this? A very opportunistic exit by Cerberus in terms of their Albertsons IPO. Finally getting done. Third try's the charm.
I think you do bring up a good point that not all IPOs are alike. And when you look at the hot IPOs, they are something that they're raising growth capital. And it could even be, you don't necessarily have to agree with whatever growth vertical they're looking at, but it is for growth capital. It's not just an LBO exit. It's not just an exit by a private equity company. So the read-through for this is for private equity firms that are looking at IPO exits. Likely not the best of ideas. In that vein, perhaps looking at a SPAC as an exit is a smart idea for these private equity companies, just given the dynamics in this situation. But like you said, this had the triple whammy of pricing below its range, then trading down on the first day. So in no way was this a hot deal. So really that's just damaging to the investment bankers. For the company, they were actually able to raise at $16. So they were able to get, I guess, a more efficient price as opposed to just having that initial one-day pop accrue to those investors that have come into the IPO. But looking at Cerberus and the overall deal, like you had mentioned, they held it for 14 years. They had initially acquired it for an enterprise value of around $17 billion. Now they're exiting at around a $21.6 billion enterprise value. Just looking at that on its face, 14 years and not a huge return from $17 billion to 21.6. But keep in mind that throughout that time, it is highly likely, as the company is cash flow positive, that they would have been paying themselves quite large dividends and would have been able to find different ways to extract value from the company. But really what this comes down to, I'd read some of the quotes of Albertson's CEO discussing some of their growth initiatives, which, you know, very rosy picture on their growth initiatives, talking about the percentage growth of their e-segment, so their e-commerce version of groceries, where, I mean, they just, it's the law of small numbers, where you're growing at a very high rate off of a very low base that is in no way really material to the company at this point, as well as things that every other grocer is doing. They're growing their private label brands, but really every grocer is doing that. So it's nothing unique to the name. So I did, in reading some of the comments, was a little uninspired by the CEO's comments. But overall, I mean, what can you do? At the end of the day, they're talking about these growth initiatives, but they're not raising capital for those growth initiatives. They are strictly doing an exit for the private equity firm. So at the really, you know, you have a very smart buyer that has been looking to exit this deal for a long period of time. Typically, you know, don't want to be on the other side of a private equity exit.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. Certainly, the odds are stacked against you. Not saying that it'll be a loser of a stock, but certainly if Cerberus is selling, I wouldn't be buying. So last thing I wanted to touch on this week was the blog post I put out a couple days ago. It was titled "Heads I Win, Tails I Win: Low Risk Investing with SPAC Arbitrage," which is one of my favorite trades these days, especially in this environment, as we've discussed, super high equity valuations, a lot of volatility, record low bond yields. So investors are really struggling, and not to mention that wicked bear market that we went through in the first quarter. Lots of people are looking at their portfolios these days and be like, I don't want to go through that again. What can I do besides selling everything and sitting in cash? Well, one interesting trade is SPAC arbitrage. And why we like it is that the special purpose acquisition company just holds treasuries, like short-term treasuries, which are admittedly yielding very, very low, like 0.15%. So that's not really why we're keen on the trade. SPAC arbitrage, you don't just get that short-term T-bill yield. There's basically two scenarios that can generate returns for a special purpose acquisition company investment. So the baseline scenario is that the SPAC does not complete a merger within its lifetime and either liquidates or presents an unattractive deal. The stock does not pop, contrary to this F45 deal and that Tortoise deal that we chatted about last week. If it's a bad deal, you can redeem your shares at the IPO price plus accrued interest. So you do get that baseline yield of treasuries. If you can buy it at a discount, which is what we like to do, you get treasury yield plus that discount, which is a nice low-risk opportunity. However, there is this upside scenario where you have this optionality of them announcing a good deal. F45, that one rallied as much as 29% on deal announcement, now up single digits, but it was previously trading at a discount. So in the upside scenario, the SPAC announces a business combination that the market is keen on, and its price rises way above net asset value, and the share price increase represents this equity upside scenario. I highlighted two examples specifically. One was a SPAC called Insurance Acquisition. They didn't even announce a deal. All that came out was they were in talks to do a deal with private company Shift Technologies, which is an online retailer for used cars, which is somewhat funny because Insurance Acquisition was, they indicated their deal was going to be in insurance. So a bit of a pivot on their part. But nonetheless, the market was super keen on this deal. It went from a roughly 0.5% discount to net asset value in terms of where the SPAC was trading. And the next day after deal announcement, it was nearly 16% premium. So a wicked short-term gain of 16% above and beyond any sort of arbitrage yield that a shareholder was expecting. So we like these trades just because of the very low downside. And in certain cases, high upside. For example, if we look at another one, and all these deals have taken place this month in June. So June 19th, SPAC Tortoise Acquisition announced a business combination with private co Hylion, which is a manufacturer of electrified powertrain solutions for semi-trucks. And as everyone knows, if you look at Tesla stock, you look at Nikola stock, electric vehicles are hot these days in the stock market. This one, no different. I mean, going from a 1% discount prior to deal announcement to a stunning 65.5% premium. So if you're in this for the SPAC arbitrage, you'd be looking to make over a 1% annualized return. You wake up the next day, you're up 66%, which is a explosive gain for what looks like a very low risk trade. So those risk reward dynamics are what we like. And we are looking to capitalize on the market's excitement about SPAC deals. So we are looking to buy SPACs pre-deal and really harvest those gains once these deals are announced. And we've seen it really come to fruition this month. A lot of hot deals being announced, probably close to 6, and I expect to see more of those. We call it a heads I win, tails I still win bet. And it's hard to argue against that one, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, it certainly is. And I mean, overall, like as a firm, we are quite keen on the SPAC space, and it just represents such a good opportunity for risk-adjusted returns. And I think you put it very well in your blog post, just discussing a few case studies on how this actually works. As you look at some of the Reddit forums and things of that nature, where it's still, and even Matt Levine, where he'll talk about SPACs, and it's just something that he's just recently learned the underlying structure, and especially on the Reddit forums, is there's a lot of confusion on how these actually work, and it but it can be quite an interesting strategy. But it does take a lot of work in understanding the redemption process and things of that nature, because you don't want to be ending up missing a redemption, as Julian, I believe you've tweeted out a few times before on what can happen if you do miss the redemption. But it's a very interesting space to be following at this time.
Yeah, you make a good point there, because it may not be actionable for individual investors if they have small portfolio sizes, because some brokerage firms actually do charge a fee for a redemption, whether it's $50 or $80. So if you're looking to earn a 1% spread, investments of $10,000 in a single SPAC probably may not be too worthwhile. So I caution individual investors on following this strategy if you don't have a sizable portfolio, just given the costs can be somewhat cost prohibitive in terms of affecting this type of arbitrage. But always learning in the market. It's great to see investors interested in this really new structure that's gained a lot of popularity, as you indicated, Mike, very popular on Reddit these days. They're liking some of these hot deals that have come out that subsequently become popular with the Robinhood trading crowd. I believe a BurgerFi deal is really hot. And you see SPAC Forum Capital Acquisition Company, FMCI, being bid up by the Robinhood traders. But that's really all we got to chat about this week on episode 74 of the Absolute Return Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to check out more at absolutereturnpodcast.com and definitely give us a follow on Twitter. You can find me at the People's Hedge Fund Manager. So that's at Julian Klimochko, KLYMOCHKO. Mike, what's your handle? How do they follow you on the Twitter machine?
Mine is M_Kesslering.
Okay, great. So be sure to give him a follow as well. We wish you all the best of luck in your trading, investing, and speculating this week, and we'll chat with you soon. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty expressed or implied is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.